Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Texans return home from Arrowhead with the loss. We're going to talk about that and look forward to their matchup with the Ravens. All that and more on this edition of the Bullpen.
The throw, the punch is on. He floats one wide open, and there he goes. Taped down for a Texan touchdown.
Hello and welcome to the Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chavarria. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. It's been a long day of football that wasn't the Texans. At time of recording, we're late into Sunday evening. But, there was a lot that I took away from this game that I felt good about. Obviously, we're going to talk about a lot that needs to be corrected and some stuff that happened that was unfortunate. But all in all, I felt like, this was a game that the Texans were in that I felt like they could win. And, a play here, play there, and maybe we're having different conversations today.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had a better time than I did watching the game because you were hanging out with, Houston Stressens, Aziz Al-Shaair, the who's who of Texan social media at the watch party. So we'll start with that. How was that? How was that experience hanging out at Tejas Brewing Company?
An amazing event, an amazing location. I had never been to that brewery before. The beer was good. The food was good. Had steak quesadillas. A little on the price side, but did not mind it at all. Literally the third floor balcony just peers out into the Houston skyline. Beautiful picture. It was a great place to watch a game. And then obviously who's who of Texans social media was there. Just so many different content creators in the Texans space. Obviously headlined by Houston Stressens, who, by some form of magic, which everything it seems like he does turns to gold. Aziz Al-Shaair shows up on the scene, and the place it was awesome. It was a different feel. It's really wild to spend an afternoon. Obviously you should never have to watch a game with one of the players, but it's pretty cool say that we did.
No, yeah, it looked like it was fun. Wish I could have been there. I'm glad that the bullpen was represented by our very own Tom Chavarria at that event. And I look forward to seeing, that sort of thing happen where it's nice to see Texans fans getting together and watching the game, having a good time. Hopefully in the future, more times than not, without any of the players there, more so because I'd rather have Agent Zero on the field. Free Agent Zero, as we always say. But let's get into the Chiefs matchup. A little disappointing in the fact that the Texans didn't win. I think there's a lot of positives to take away from it, more so than I think other people will tell you. But obviously, as we said going into the game, the focus was going to be on the offense. The offense did not exactly come through in the way that we would have liked it to. But it's a one-score game, and the Texans come away. I don't think they look like a clear-cut, like, this is going to be the team that takes the AFC, but I think they look like a team that could make some noise. I mean, we could see the same old Texans that make it out of the first round and then the divisional round, still a question mark in my eyes. But just overall, watching this game, what do you take away in terms of the Texans, chances of maybe making a deep run in the playoffs?
I think they have it. There have been times in previous seasons where you felt like, okay, it didn't matter what the Texans did. You didn't see them with the tools, with the potential to be a team that makes it into the AFC Championship, a team that could play for a Super Bowl. I think watching this game going head up with the Kansas City Chiefs, I think you saw a team that certain plays go their way. They're clean on that Sunday or Saturday or whatever the case may be. They can absolutely beat any team in the league. And early on in that game, I felt like they were fully in that game and we're making plays to win the football game. Like I said, so many times in years past, Texans teams just find ways to not stack up with some of the elite talent. I felt like they really did.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to see the give and take here because, like, in my opinion, the offense didn't look like amazing, but this game is a lot closer if the defense doesn't get exposed. There's a couple of things that happened to the defense that kind of made them, I don't want to say the whole game was the defense looking less than Super Bowl caliber, but the defense did have its weak moments. And the loss of Jimmy Ward, I think, highlighted an issue that was bound to come up with Jimmy Ward having his injury history and with Jalen Petrie missing significant time, which is that outside of those two, who fills the star safety role? And when the Texans don't have that on the field, how does this defense exist? They really heavily rely on the versatility of that position to make this defense viable. And it was very clear once Jimmy Ward went down injured that the Texans defense was less than it's been. I don't want to say that it's lost enough of a step to concern me in terms of their ability to be the defense that the Texans need in the postseason, but I think it makes it even more imperative that the offense steps up. And on both sides of the ball, there was points where there was flashes of like, oh, this team is like here to play. And likewise on the offensive side of the ball, I felt like the defining moment, like I know CJ's interceptions were early, so they were during this period of play, but the loss of Tank Dell had a huge impact on this game. And I'd like to say, you know, prayers up for Tank. It was nice to hear that he's back in Houston. Saw that he posted on Instagram. A shame to see it go down like that. I mean, obviously it's a huge positive that he's back in Houston. They haven't done surgery yet, which means that there's viable options for him to recover quicker. Much like most people, I don't really particularly care if he plays again this season. I'm just glad that in the long run, this isn't looking like something that could be career ending, which was definitely on the table based off of how things went down. But this offense looked really good in this game. Prior to that, you know, obviously 100 yards from Tank Dell and a touchdown that it's honestly impressive he hung on to, with that being the play that he got injured on. There was a lot, like I said, a lot of positives to take away from this, as much as people don't think there is. Diving deeper into the offensive side of the ball, how did you feel about Bobby Slowick's play calling? I have to ask that because I think that everyone hates it, and I think it's the first thing everyone blames, but I'm not going to lie, I'll probably elaborate after you answer, but initially, just for everyone to know, because you probably may have heard me say it or seen me write about it, I didn't think it was like awful. I thought it was solid. I think there was, the negatives were fewer, but they were glaring, and they were the issue, definitely, in a way. But how did you feel about his play calling?
I think a lot of people are looking for a smoking gun. They want this is what's wrong with the Texans, and if you just fix that, everything's going to be good. And right now, the easy, low-hanging fruit is Bobby Slowick and his play calling. And you see guys constantly tweet about other teams around the league and how, you know, they're better coached and they're well-oiled, and look at, you know, what Detroit's doing, and, you know, they're coming up with these great elaborate plays. I think you had a tweet along those lines. And look, when plays that are ran a certain way work, yeah, everyone looks like a genius. When they don't, everyone looks like a fool. And for the Texans, you look at some of these screen plays, and I feel that's what a lot of people are really upset with, of the screens. And look, I can't remember the year, but, you know, I want to say it was like maybe 10 years ago, Andre Johnson takes a screen to the house, and nobody's complaining about a wide receiver screen. Nico Collins, I think last year, the year before, takes a screen to the house, and nobody's complaining about a wide receiver
screen. He's done it this year too. I mean, it's happened. They've worked.
So it's one of those things where if it had worked recently, maybe people aren't upset. But right now, we're what, 2, maybe 3 weeks in to just negative screenplay after negative screenplay after negative screenplay. And fans are sharp to it. They're like, look, that didn't work last week, didn't work the week before. You just can't do this and expect to be good teams. And I think that's why people are upset. I think that's why people are going, Bobby Slowick's got to go. I think that's why. And I still haven't lost the fact that he's a second-year offensive coordinator, where the guy across the field from him has got 25 years of experience or whatever, and he's already washed out of a couple different spots himself. So do I think this is indicative of what Bobby Slowick will be long-term? Absolutely not. Do I think he survives Houston? I don't know. But, you know, the expectations right now are just so high for this team from the fan base, I think. I think internally they're high too, but I think there's a little bit of reason there going, look, we're glad that we're great. or could be great, but we understand we're in the beginning of this phase. Like year two, that's still early. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. And I know we've had this conversation before where, you know, hey, we're past that point. But when you have guys that make mistakes that are, you know, second year mistakes, that's why they make them. So I think Bobby's going to learn from this. I think Bobby's going to get better. He's going to become a better coach from a lot of this. I think CJ is going to be a better quarterback from a lot of this. But we're okay with some people's mistakes. We're not with others. And to me, it's really tough. Like, I understand why Bobby's trying to do what he's trying to do. You know, we got an offensive line that can't block so well. So maybe get the ball out of CJ's hand quicker. A wide receiver screen does that. If it goes for negative yards, though, fan base doesn't want to hear it.
Yeah, and I mean, so to speak to, for those who don't know, the tweet that Tom is referencing is a video of the fake fumble that Ben Johnson pulled out of his deep bag, because Ben Johnson is calling such a great offense for the Lions that he can throw touchdowns to offensive linemen and literally fake turning the ball over to throw a touchdown pass to his tight end. So that's the deeper root of that. But to speak to it, I've spoken to it at points, but I think it's more about it's less about the play calling, right? Because like you said, the goal is to get the ball out of CJ's hands quick. Wide receiver screen will do that. And in the situations that they're being thrown, it's a great play call. It's just not being executed. And so then you go, well, James, why is it not being executed? Well, why are we asking our left tackle to run 10 to 15 yards out away from his spot to make a block before Nico? Oh, wait, no, Nico's already tackled because Laremy Tunsil's not, you know, Flash Gordon. He's freaking left tackle. So the design on some of these plays, like if you watch them back and watch the film, is asking a lot of the players, and it's not really set up for success. So with that, there's been wide receiver screens. The progression of that conversation has been interesting, because at first it was, why do we run so many screens? And then it was, why do we run any screens that don't go to Nico Collins? And now all of the, most at least of the screens that were run in this last game went to Nico Collins. They just went for negative yards because he wasn't set up to make anything of it. Maybe he's just been able to make something of it in the past, and maybe it's just not there. I mean, realistically, like I said, I think it's play structure. They're not really anticipating every possible outcome or setting the guys up to make the blocks they need to make for those screens to work. So that's my perspective on it. And I agree with you. I think that they're looking for a smoking gun. Every fan wants to be able to say that this is the one thing. And you know me, I've always said it's the offensive line. That's been my smoking gun all season long. I'm like, well, it's the one thing we can't fix. It's the one thing that's always just going to be the way it is. Any marginal improvement from it that you get from shuffling around the talent that's on the roster is useful, but isn't going to fix the problem entirely. But to this point, I feel like the offensive line has improved a lot. I do feel like there was a few plays in this game where the offensive line could be put on blast, you know, right tackle specifically, or even left guard. Really, the tackles that are playing on the offensive line that aren't Laremy Tunsil could be put on blast. Shaq Mason, the interior offense, really, you could look at any part of the offensive line and find a play in this game. Yeah, you find a play in this game where they didn't do well. And likewise, you could find plays in this game where CJ just really didn't play well. And that's a whole nother thing where it's like, people are like, why is CJ not hitting checkdowns? I'm like, CJ, you should know, based on, there was a play in the red zone in this game where the announcers praised him for, look, his eyes are down the field the whole play. He could have scrambled here and gotten the yardage, but his eyes are down the field looking for the big play. And that's exactly why he's not hitting checkdowns. His eyes are down the field looking for the big play. And people loved it when it was working. And now people are like, why is CJ the way that he is? And why is he failing? And it's like, I mean, you wanted a guy who's looking for the big play all the time. Maybe the big play is not there. I don't know. But there's a number of things. And Tom and I have spoken about it at length, so I won't like beat a dead horse. But the short of it is that any two of those things could get better, and it would drastically improve this offense. It's just a matter of which two are going to. I think CJ and the O-line are the two most likely to kind of make some sort of improvement. Bobby Slowick has not given any indication that he's adjusting his play calling. Though I do think he kind of made a move. The first down negative yardage thing is the other part of this conversation that a lot of people maybe aren't bringing up. I know I am, because that's the two part. If you look at the two things, or for two things that Bobby Slowick's play calling kind of set this team up to suck at. It was the screens and then literally not gaining yards on first down. That's it. And so there was some first downs where it looked like, you know, he would drop back to pass to CJ and it looked really good. But then on other first downs, he's like, let's hand it to Joe Mixon up the middle and see if we can lose a yard. and that's just not, I mean, so many times, it still feels like almost every time this offense starts second and 11. And the commentators caught on to it because they were every time they were like, and once again, this Texans offense is starting with negative yards on first down. It's like, okay, man, like it's hard to be successful. And so we'll go through this circle of, well, we're not getting yards on first down. So then CJ starting from behind. So then CJ makes a mistake, but he's mentally out because he's starting from behind. And then the O-line fails and CJ gets hit. And now CJ, it all circles back to these things that are making CJ not good. And now CJ's not good. Or is it because of the other factors? I don't know. We've run around in circles chasing that conversation for a while now. I feel sick thinking about it, but the offense just needs to be better. That's the whole thing. You have anything to say about that before we move on?
I do feel like guys that don't like the fact that they run on first down because it's a vanilla thing to do. And then, well, okay, you step back and you throw and you incomplete a pass and then it's second and 10. Well, now you're not running on second and 10 because you're already behind the sticks. So now you're throwing. Oh, well, now CJ sacked because the whole world knows you're throwing on second down because it's second and 10. And then it's third and forever. And they're like, why are the Texans like this? And it's like, well, you didn't want them to run the football, or they ran the football and then it didn't work. And that's the way the game is. Like teams don't gain yards on every play. And sometimes you got to have guys make a play. Now, if that doesn't happen for CJ every time he drops back, you have to have some patience with that. Some people don't want to hear it. You know, there was a drive towards the end of the game where Bobby calls a run play and it goes for, like you said, I think it went for a yard or maybe it went for negative yards. And it was like, what are we doing? And so it's a one score game. You got 5 minutes. You have the time to run the football. This is the time to do it. And, you know, then second down, he goes and it's incomplete. Third down, he gets sacked and they're off the field. So it's easy to say, well, that sucks when it doesn't work. And then it's easy to say, well, man, look how good that looks when you do it and it works. So,
well, and it goes back to, once again, we're chasing the conversation in circles because there's not a smoking gun. So you can go back, you say, well, the Texans always get negative yards. Why are they always running it on first down? It's like, no, you're asking the wrong question. The real question is a good elite offense should be able to run it on first down and gain 2 to 3 yards at a minimum. Why are they not gaining those yards? Well, the run blocking sucks. Well, is it schemed poorly or is the run blocking just awful? And then we go, well, is it CJ's fault that we're not gaining yards on first down? Well, no, he's handing the ball off to the running back. Unless, of course, he's dropping back to pass. And honestly, on the plays where he did that, it wasn't a guarantee, but he was hitting some good throws on first down. But you can't expect Bobby to just throw it on first down every time, like you said. So there's not a clear-cut answer. It's just always like chasing your tails on that. And I bet fan bases do this on teams where the offense is good and where it's consistent. Because in a game where that happens, you always have to ask yourself, why is it that usually we move the ball on first down and this week we didn't? But with the Texans offense, it's like we never move the ball on first down. And why is that? And I don't know. It changes. There's a number of reasons why Joe Mixon maybe can't break the line of scrimmage. And I don't know if any of them are him, if you know what I'm saying. But we've talked about the offense. There's you could talk a number of things. Looking forward, I guess, since we're talking about we're trying to preview the Ravens game too at the same time, I'll ask you this this question. How do you feel about the Texans possibly picking up a wide receiver? I don't think they're going to do it before the Ravens game, but just forward looking, do you think it's necessary for them to pick up a wide receiver?
It's going to be really interesting. I mean, there are guys out there. Odell Beckham's out there. Deontay Johnson's out there. But those guys all have warts, so do you really want to try to make one of those pegs fit? Obviously, you've got guys in-house in Xavier Hutchinson and, you know, John Mechie that have been parts of this offense now for multiple years. So you would think those would be the guys to lean on. To be honest, I didn't know who Jared Wayne was until he hit
until you ran into Tank Dell.
So I'm curious what you know his role is, where he came from, and maybe, you know, are we going to see him now become more of this offense because they're down a wide receiver? I don't know that I need to go get a name just for the sake of getting a name. I think they have Nico Collins for that. It just depends on if they feel like John Metchie's injury is going to be long term, because I know they're definitely going to need, you know, to fill that hole some way for Tank. I don't think they're just going to go with three wide receivers and just hope that they have enough. I think they definitely got to go out and get somebody off the practice squad or somebody from the outside. It just depends on what level do you want to plug him in. Do you want him to be somebody that's an emergency guy? Do you want him to be somebody that you need to get the ball to right away? Is that pressure on CJ to try to build chemistry with somebody right away? You know, because they brought him in. If he doesn't feed him the rock, then, you know, there's animosity there. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Like you said, I don't see them doing anything about it in this Ravens game. There's just not enough time. And anything that they do will be for a playoff run or, you know, something of that. They'll try to figure it out in the Tennessee game.
Yeah, there's been rumored mutual interest between the Texans and Odell Beckham. That's the only receiver that there is any rumor revolving around. But judging by the way they've treated bringing in new talent to this Texans offense in the middle of the season, I don't think it's viewed as something that someone can just walk in and pick up right away. And I think the Texans in general, all around, have kind of been like, we'll trust our depth and trust our guys. So if they do bring someone in, I don't think they'll immediately be relied on to be impactful. And I'll say this, right now the depth chart in my mind, just off the top of my head, reads Nico Collins, and then you've got Robert Woods, John Metchie, Xavier Hutchinson. And those are your four guys that should consistently see the field as Texans wide receivers. And to me, as much as people really wanted Robert Woods gone this past offseason, I think that a situation where he sees more of the field is very beneficial to the Texans run game because he is an excellent blocking wide receiver. And when he's been targeted, he's been pretty solid as a target. We could also talk about the tight end position, but I really don't want to. I don't feel like talking about it. It's just because I think that we're coming off the discussion of wide receivers, and it makes me think about the tight end because those are two positions that I think everyone was like, oh, the Texans are set there. That we will not be talking about them having any strong need or desire to fix those during this season or going into this next offseason because they'll be set and everything has kind of gone out the window in some way, shape, or form at both of those positions. I heard someone say, get rid of Dalton Schultz, bring Brevin Jordan back as the starter with Cade Stover and see if that can work and then draft a good tight end in this draft. Like, that's where it's gotten to. So I guess briefly, what are your thoughts on Dalton Schultz in this tight end room?
I feel for Dalton because I think when Dalton signed, because it was before all the flurry of moves, I truly feel like the Texans thought he was going to be a big part of their offense. And all season long, he's been the fourth option, fifth option, you know. And then you go from getting, you know, 8 to 10 targets to getting, you know, 4 to 6 targets. And one or two drops are magnified like 1,000 times more 100%. than, you know, they normally would be because, okay, I'm seeing the ball more. So case in point, Dalton catches a touchdown in this game and it's like, okay, cool. Dalton Schultz.
All anyone's talking about is his drop.
Dalton drops a key third down play that, you know, CJ puts the ball on his hands and he's just trying to get upfield, you know, before he's got the ball and forget that touchdown, get Dalton out of town. And it's like, that's so tough. Like I don't ever want to be held to those standards in my personal job because that's my standards. Dalton's a good player. I think they got him on a good contract. I think he's going to score for them. He's going to be a big part of this offense now, even more going forward, because I think really when you look at where CJ's progressions are now, Dalton's got to move to like the two spot, right? I mean,
yeah, 100%. I think you, that's the point that I would have brought up is simply put, like, sure. It, like you said, I think you put it really well. His mistakes are magnified by a lack of target share, but he is also a huge beneficiary of the Tank Dell injury. So I would suspect, like I said, I would suspect the Texans might look into bringing in another wide receiver, maybe a veteran like an Odell Beckham, like a Michael Thomas, Hunter Renfrow. I could go on about the wide receivers that are available that show potential to be signed on to fill that hole. But I could also very well see them not addressing wide receiver through the rest of the season because they believe that Schultz should be able to step up and be that guy and take up more of the target share. And I think it'd be beneficial to CJ to have his tight end, you know, be more productive in the passing game. So that's what I'll say about that. Just two more things to talk about before we kind of more focus on next week's matchup, but we'll talk about this. CJ had a pretty visceral reaction to Tank Dell's injury. And that you said about expectations for Schultz, that kind of reminded me of that, because I'll tell you, I think maybe 70% of the people that saw that said, oh man, his best friend, like, just got his like knee dislocated, broke, whatever. It was a really serious thing. It took him a really long time to get him off the field. I'd probably do that too if that happened. And I think there's other people that think that professional athletes have training in like dealing with that, and that CJ as a leader crying makes him like a weakling and like not a good leader, and that it's like an indictment on him as the Texans franchise quarterback, and that he should have like been stone cold and like used this as fuel to lead the Texans on a game-winning drive. And I think that instead of like fueling it, he maybe was more affected by it, both from a disparity in talent on the field. Obviously, Tank Dell leaving the field lowers the talent level in that wide receiver room, but also just mentally maybe just kind of checked out a little bit. How did you feel about CJ's reaction to Tank Dell's injury? What are your thoughts on it?
I definitely did not see any of this coming when it happened. I really thought that people were going to like rally to CJ and be like, look, you know, this is a guy showing incredible love for his brother. You know, like he's talked about him, you know, in a term where, you know, blood couldn't make us any closer. So to see him, you know, with his entire leg just in pieces, and they have to, you know, literally bring an ambulance onto the field or whatever to cart him off, you know, I didn't have a problem with his reaction. The way some people took that, like he should, you know, treat that dude like a number and go, okay, next guy up, and then just keep on moving, is incredibly cold to me. And I just don't understand it. Like, and then to think, you know, and I've seen this in comments everywhere else where he was checked out, and it's like, a guy that's checked out isn't on the field. Like he just would have just not came back into the game. Like you act like he was throwing the ball into the dirt, you know, just, you know, causing silly penalties and this and that. Like CJ was still trying to win a football game. He was trying to win it for Tank Dell, in my opinion. Now, did he, like you said, did he have less to work with? Yes. Was the scenario, the situation now harder because they're down on the road in a hostile environment? Yes. And I just think people lost that, you know, the ones that felt like he checked out, like, I don't know what game you were watching, but at no point in time did I look at that and go, oh, this is a guy that didn't want to be there. You know, like he's just done. Like, if I don't have Tank, I'm not going to play. Like, absolutely not. He's still trying to make plays all the way up until the end.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people remove the human element from it. And I like, that's like, I would compare it to if you have a surgeon who's performing surgery on you and like things start to go sideways, you're like, well, that's his job to do surgery. He's supposed to anticipate anything. And he's supposed to perform, but like sometimes those surgeries, they go sideways and the surgeon can't recover. Maybe it's beyond his control. Maybe it's whatever. And so CJ as a professional, yeah, sure. As a quarterback, he's paid a lot of money to play quarterback. And there are very few things that should faze him. But at the end of the day, I think it did. I mean, I'm not going to say that he like played the game like it didn't happen. Like it obviously affected him in some way. He had a very reaction. It's not like he just like was like, oh, whatever, just my bestest friend ever in the history of the sport, I'm just gonna put it aside and play football. Like that's not what happened. But I also think there's an element to it that a lot of people are overlooking, which is that a lot of this discussion probably is avoided if CJ Stroud is playing close to or at the level that he was last year. And I think that because CJ is viewed as being playing less than, and it's gotten, that discussion's gotten to a point where a lot of people try and point at Bobby, they try and point at the O-line, but it started to bleed into, and it's a discussion worth having, right? CJ is not performing at the same level as last year. He's turning the ball over a lot more. It is certainly something worth noting, but I think some people are taking it as a reason to be mad that he didn't lock in after. They're like, oh, well, CJ's not an elite quarterback anymore, so now that's like an indictment on him, is that now he's really not an elite quarterback because he also can't lock in when bad things happen in games. And I'm not talking about like throwing a pick. I'm talking about like your best friend's leg shattering and you having to watch him get put into an ambulance in a very serious fashion, which, by the way, in case you didn't know, that knee dislocation, the reason they transported Tank Dell the way they did, from what I heard from a lot of those sports MDs that explain it, is that with the way that it happened, there was risk of arterial damage, which means that they could have punctured an artery that would have caused him to bleed significantly. And because they didn't puncture the skin, his skin was still intact. It would have been internal bleeding. There would have been no way to tell if he was bleeding, and he could have very well bled out in that case. I don't know if the femoral artery was in the line of questioning, because I'm not quite sure how that flows outside of the thigh. But so that was the concern. And if that was in any way related to CJ, then like, it's not, it, a lot of people are like, well, it wasn't like it was life or death. And if that was related to CJ on the field, then yeah, it was life or death. Tank was being put in an ambulance, transported 12 miles to the, KC hospital. I can't remember what it was called. And during that time, CJ's like, I wonder if my best friend's still alive, getting transported to the hospital in that serious of fashion. So I think it's a little more serious than people are giving it credence to. I think that a lot of people are maybe treating this as a lapse in leadership because of the way they view CJ's performance so far this season. And I just think maybe people are making too much of it. I think that at the end of the day, if I was there and if my best friend went down like that, I'd probably have a little trouble locking in after. I'd do my best, obviously, because you want to win it for him. But like, it is a traumatic event, and I'm not going to fault him for how that happened. Now, if it continues to affect him after this game, yeah, sure, whatever. I'll start to maybe bang the gong on that, but I'm not going to fault CJ for in the moment, in the game that it happened, having that reaction. So. Oh, oh, oh,
O'Reilly. Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. Anyway, let's look at the defense before we talk about next week's game. Like I kind of said, I alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, this Texans defense is a Super Bowl caliber elite defense, top five, however you want to describe it. And there was some shortcomings. I'd just like to get your overall view on how this Texans defense performed against the Chiefs.
I didn't see it that way. I've heard that in many different spaces, the post game that I did with Rob Land. I didn't see it. This is a really good football team, and anybody that wants to discredit, KC for scoring points and saying that the defense failed when these guys have scored points on every team every week and have what a lot of people argue is the best quarterback in football. A lot of people argue is the best tight end in football. They've got probably the best offensive coordinator in football. Like the fact that they scored 27 points, doesn't surprise me. Like, yes, would a team that was healthy probably hold that team down a little bit more? Maybe. Like we talked about Jimmy Ward. I think that was a big loss for them, just for the simple fact that what D'Amico decided to do in that scenario was to move Kamari Lassiter in and have Kamari play that star role, which I think he played well. I think that's a good fit. I do wonder if Jeff Okuda can fill in out on the outside. They targeted him a couple times and were able to take advantage of him out there. The Chiefs, I think, were fortunate with some penalties that helped them move the football and helped them keep the football and things like that. teams that aren't the Texans have been talking about all season. You know, they put points on the board that, you know, they probably shouldn't have been able to put on the board. So, for me, I feel like the Texans defense played well enough for the Texans to win the football game. And anytime you can go on the road and give your offense a chance, you know, albeit they still gave up, like we said, 27 points. I think there was a couple plays. If the strip fumble pick up and score is called that way, I think this game is totally different. And to anybody that says, oh, well, you know, that was clear. He was definitely throwing the football. Like, no, it wasn't. And the fact that they didn't review it bothered me. I mean, there were
obviously they reviewed it because they overturned it. It was called on the field as a fumble. And I agree with you. My issue with it is that usually you need like hard concrete evidence. It's like, you know, certainty. For me, the way I look at it is this, like, I didn't necessarily hate that overturn. I hated the penalty they called on that play, which was then enacted because they overturned it. But overall, you could argue that Pat Mahomes, like the uncertainty to me is Pat Mahomes may have been tucking the football. And I'm not sure if the tuck rule is still a thing or how that works. But his arm was moving forward before it was touched. It's just a matter of like it was moving forward, but it looked like he was going to tuck the football, which then is not a throwing motion. But if we're just looking at the arm moving forward, that was 100% happening. And if that's how they determined it, then yeah, it was an incomplete pass. But I agree with you. I have questions about the specifics around how they came to that determination and if there was irrefutable evidence that that was the case. But yeah, that's my take on it.
I heard that totally different because supposedly they didn't review it because they called the flag and the flag trumped all that. So they didn't look at it. It didn't count because they immediately enforced the flag.
The ref on the field, literally, this is what the ref said, right? In the onset of that, the ref said, the ruling on the field is a fumble recovered by the defense and returned for a touchdown. The previous play is under further review. And then when they reviewed it, they came back out and they said, after further review, the ruling on the field is that the quarterback threw the pass forward. In the process of that, there's a penalty on the defense, unsportsmanlike conduct, roughing the passer, 15-yard penalty, automatic first down. So that was how that was called on the field. If I had thought that it happened the way that you did, yeah, I would have felt the same way, but they definitely reviewed it. My question was if like they don't really talk to us about what their evidence was or if it was irrefutable or whatever, but I thought it was questionable enough that maybe the call on the field would stand, but I wasn't super mad about that play in general as much as other Texan fans were personally.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of plays in the first half that I think totally impacted huge chunks. You know, I think the offensive pass interference on Tank Dell cost them 3 points and potentially, you know,
it was 100% not an offensive pass. That one was more frustrating than the fumble.
There was a couple screens or pick plays that I think that Kansas City was able to get away with that were huge plays. So
a play that didn't really impact the game that kind of frustrated me was that offsides call on Nico Collins. I was like, literally they showed the replay, and I was like, he's not offsides first off, but second off, he's a wide receiver. Unless he didn't check in with the ref, like he literally should be on sides. And I don't know how anyway,
but all of these things I think were impactful to, you know, the Texans being able to A, score or B, stop them. And, you know, to me, I think if that's called a little bit more evenly, I think we're talking about a lower scoring game. You know, we're not talking about giving up 27 points. So, but I mean, you can't change that. It's just those are the things that frustrate you, knowing, you know, they probably played a pretty decent game if you don't get those calls that really gave Kansas City life.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like looking back at it, I felt like as bad as the refereeing was, and as much as it felt like it was kind of against the Texans, and as much momentum as it felt like it took away from the Texans, at the end of the day – a lot of what I felt like caused the Texans to lose this game was self-inflicted. I put more weight on the turnovers, which I before the game I said my key to victory was literally just don't turn the ball over. The Texans gave up 10 points off turnovers and lost 27 to 19. So do the math on that. They lost quite literally because of the turnovers. Now, obviously, you can go back. You can't like say, well, if they didn't turn the ball over, the Chiefs, you know, or if they then the Chiefs wouldn't have scored those points. Maybe the Chiefs come by those points a different way. But just looking at it as black and white, those 10 points, if you take them off the board because the turnovers didn't happen, then yeah. But so I put more weight on that, and I don't think that was something that was inflicted by bad officiating per se. And so, but I think the Texans definitely showed up in a way where that better officiating maybe makes it a more even game and gives the Texans a better chance at winning. I agree with you. But, oh well. But defensively, I guess just to close out that discussion, I felt like the Texans defense was playing at or around the level that they normally play. I think that the loss of Jimmy Ward and just the onslaught of injuries didn't help. I think that Henry Toa didn't quite perform to the level that he's been performing. I think this is the first game where we kind of noted, you know, missing the presence of an injured linebacker for the Texans, whereas in most of the other games this season, that linebacking corps kind of been able to persist without, you know, not without missing those guys per se, but it's been less noticeable. And so that for me, combined with the Jimmy Ward injury, kind of really tanked the defense's chances. I think the defense could have held the Chiefs under 20, or at least at 20, which would have been almost more frustrating to have Kymie Fairbairn miss that extra point and then the game end 20-19. But either way, I felt like defensively the Texans were maybe less than they have been, but I don't want to overemphasize it. Like the issue, in my opinion, is still the offense for this game. The defense did their best as far as I'm concerned, but I do think it definitely brings some optimism for the future going into this Ravens game and going into the playoffs, knowing that this team wasn't playing their best ball and kept it a 1 score game. And I think they can find their best ball. They're running out of time to do it. The playoffs are basically here, but they can still do it. And that kind of brings us into our discussion of the Ravens game. There's such a short time period between Saturday and Christmas that Tom and I are just kind of let's roll into discussing this Ravens game. Maybe it might be a shorter discussion. I promise we won't talk about the halftime show with Beyonce or the fact that the Pentatonix are performing the national anthem. That was my way of mentioning it, just so in case you didn't know already that's happening. But
tell the people that you can find the game on Netflix because,
oh, and you can find the game on Netflix. We're not sponsored, but we would like to be Netflix. If you want to reach out, we'll accept your moolah to talk about you. But, anyway, the Ravens come to Houston, and I think going into this season, when I was making my score prediction, my record prediction, I would say, you know, the Chiefs game, probably a loss. Going up to Arrowhead, and I'd say, well, you know, the Ravens are coming to Houston. I think that's a winnable game. And I still think that. I think that right now, especially coming off of that Chiefs game, a 1-score game. The Chiefs also gave up 27 points to the Ravens, the Ravens also gave up 27 points to the Chiefs. They hit the extra point on one of their touchdowns instead of missing it, so that score was slightly different. But it was basically a very similar game. And so with that, I think the Texans have a good chance against the Ravens. What are your general thoughts on this matchup?
I'm looking forward to it. I really feel like this is a game that, you know, the Texans on paper, their defense, I think matches up pretty well with what Baltimore wants to do. I think the Texans have been really good as of late stopping the run. Obviously, you know, Baltimore wants to get Derrick Henry going and then kind of work off of that. So, you know, if they can bottle up Derrick Henry or at least, you know, slow him down a little bit and keep Lamar in the pocket. You know, the Texans had great success against Josh Allen, keeping him in the pocket, making him a pocket passer. I think if they can lean on some of that and really contain Lamar so he's not running wild, extending plays or picking up chunk yards with his legs, then, you know, on on paper, I feel like the Texans have everything they need to win this game.
Yeah, I think they have like a history of 1.5 total games of keeping Lamar pretty well contained. The season opener last year, they got beat by the Ravens, but they managed to pretty handily like hold Lamar in the run and pass game pretty inept, I want to say. They really relied on other aspects of their offense to get that win against the Texans. But in the playoffs, the first half, they held Lamar pretty handily. And then the second half, he kind of started to explode. And that really, you know, exacerbated an issue that the Texans were having with scoring in that game. And it led to that game being a little more lopsided than maybe it could have been. But that game was also in Baltimore. Both of those games were in Baltimore. The Texans have never won in Baltimore. Baltimore, I had to say it one more time since I've already said it so many times. But I feel good about the Ravens coming to Houston. I think the Texans play far better at home. And I think that, like you said, I think they can contain Lamar. The wrinkle that's been added that maybe concerns me, but also kind of doesn't because of the way the Texans have played run defense the past 2 years, is that Derrick Henry is now a part of that offense. And it kind of might make it a little harder to contain Lamar. And I think you kind of pick your poison there. How does that, in your mind, affect the game, the addition of Derrick Henry to this Ravens offense?
Well, I mean, I don't have to tell Texans fans what Derrick Henry's done to the Houston Texans.
Time he played us, they were pretty, they contained him pretty well.
Right.
But it was just him.
Exactly. And for me, I think, you know, that's got to be priority number one, is slowing him down and not letting them just be able to constantly feed him the rock and watch him chew up yards. So for the Texans, if they can contain Derrick Henry, I think, you know, that makes the job of, okay, now we can isolate Lamar and really kind of figure out where he wants to go with the football. He's been really good with some of these weapons. Mark Andrews is back in the fold. Isaiah Likely is doing, you know, what he does. When Mark Andrews wasn't there, I think he was the focal point. Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman, those are the guys that are going to beat you. And none of them are like huge, you know, like it's not Nico Collins on the other side of the ball. I don't think, you know, those guys are going to be able to win one-on-one matchups. It's going to be scheme, and it's just going to be on the Texans to not lose sight of some of these guys and let them get away from you. And, you know, I obviously like what the Texans do on defense. I do believe they can get to the quarterback. I do believe, you know, if Lamar throws the ball up there, Kalen Bullock, Stingley Jr., those guys can go out there and bring it the other way. And I think the Texans are going to need a turnover or two to really win this game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the defense matches up well with the offense. It is slightly concerning, especially after seeing what Anthony Richardson was able to do. I know that Anthony Richardson is not Lamar Jackson, but when the Texans have not been able to contain him, it's made those games more difficult, specifically the start of the season. So I'm interested to see how this defense stacks up against this Ravens offense. And if there's a rematch in the playoffs, I'll feel a little better about it with Azeez Al-Shaair back. With maybe, I don't think Foley Fadukasi is going to play, just the trend of him continuing to not practice. And I'm interested to see who all plays anyways from this Texans defense. It could be a more injured unit going into this game. So we'll see how they do containing. As far as the Texans offense goes, how do you feel about them matching up with this Ravens defense? Is there any points of concern for you? Historically, the Ravens have a really good defense. I can't lie to you. I'm not fully sure where they rank this year in terms of their defensive play, but I imagine still being under John Harbaugh that they play pretty decent defense.
Yeah, they're always going to show up. I think they're not going to beat themselves. I really feel like the Texans can exploit that defense. But it's going to be on them to do it. I think CJ's got to get rid of the ball early. I think we've got to see more Joe Mixon. I really want to see Joe Mixon be used in the pass game. I think we just haven't done that enough. I think you can get the Saquon Barkley effect if you throw the ball to him 5 or 6 times. And I think that helps open up the run game because you have to respect that. And I just, it's something I've been looking for all season long. where they've teased us, they've thrown him the ball two or three times here or there, but they really haven't leaned into it. Go, look, until you stop it, I'm going to keep feeding him. And when we get that, I'll be able to say, hey, this works, or all right, maybe I was wrong, let's do something else. But with minus Tank Dell, they're going to have to figure out something different. And Joe Mixon being one of those playmakers, you got to find a way to get him out in space and be able to use his ability to be shifty to make guys miss.
Yeah, players that I'll look at is C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins. I remember last year when I really knew that this Texans offense was for real was against another AFC North opponent wearing red tops and the white pants. Against the Steelers in week 4 when we inducted J.J. Watt into the Ring of Honor. And so looking at, there's a lot of similarities between those matchups, none on the field, but just like the AFC North, the uniforms. I think that if it plays out that way, this could be the game where we go, okay, most of the season, didn't really believe the Texans could make a deep run. When they played the Ravens on Netflix on Christmas Day, they gifted us with hope that they could actually contend in the AFC and actually produce offensively. So that's what I'm hopeful for. I mean, that's nothing based off of what's actually happened or what the Texans have given me any reason to believe. Just kind of trying to optimistically draw connections that make me feel better about this matchup. I do feel really good about this matchup. I think that the Texans match up well with the Ravens and that we should see a good show. And I think there's a good chance that the Texans win. On that note, let's go ahead and give our predictions. I want to know how you feel about this, because I'm going to put the Texans as the winners. I mean, I'll let you know my score prediction here in a minute, but I want to hear what Tom is thinking. What do you got?
I really feel like the Texans show up. I think they dedicate this game to Tank. I think you see every time they score, you know, somebody puts a three up or something. I don't know. This feels like a game where they're going to be emotionally charged and they're going to come out and play. I still feel like it's still going to be a very tightly contested game because that's all the Texans know. So I think it'll be a 28-24 Texan win. Big games by Nico, Joe Mixon, and CJ Stroud.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, that's how I feel about it too. I'll give the score prediction. I'm going to go 31-28. I think it's a high scoring affair. And I'll give it to the Texans. If I'm going storybook ending, whenever I give a 3-point difference, it's really hard not to go with like a field goal. I like to kind of try and flesh out the before portion. I'll put the Texans down 28-21 with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. CJ Stroud gets the ball. And they drive down the field pretty methodically, but it kind of results, it doesn't give you any reason to think they're going to win. They drive down into field goal range and D'Amico at a fourth and two from the Ravens 25, and D'Amico opts for the field goal. And everyone in the stadium is like, man, what are we doing? What are we doing? It's 28-24 now. We're not any close. It still requires a touchdown to win now. And everyone's kind of like, why did we do that? And they kick the ball to the Ravens and everything is indicating that this is going to suck. Like the Ravens get the ball first play, like 20-yard completion. Like they're basically going to put us in a position where a touchdown ties the game. Like they're going to go down and they're going to kick that field goal. And it's going to look real dumb that the Texans didn't press in and try and, you know, get a touchdown to make this a better game. The Ravens cross the 50-yard line there, the Texans 45. All hope is flying out the window. The 2-minute warning is fast approaching. And then enter Will Anderson Jr. Will Anderson Jr., as you know, got his first sack against the Ravens. And why wouldn't he do it again? He comes rushing at the blind side, and Lamar never sees him coming. Lamar Jackson drops back to pass and just gets mollywalloped and drops the ball. Danielle Hunter falls on it. The Texans get the ball at the 50 as the 2-minute warning hits. And then they methodically move down the field, a mix of runs and passes that you'd think would make Bobby Slowick look like he's a competent offensive coordinator in the eyes of the entire fan base instead of just, you know, those who watched last season, or I guess I don't know who's left that thinks that Bobby Slowick's a competent offensive coordinator. But it moves the ball. It comes down to it. 5 seconds left in the game. The Texans are at the 2 yard line, trying to punch it in, trying to close it out. It's third and goal. And they hand it to Joe Mixon, and Joe Mixon jumps over the pile, just soars, absolutely flies, and lands on the other side. Does like a front flip in the air and lands on his feet. Just like super acrobatic stuff. Like I had to find a way to make it super unrealistic, as if it wasn't already. Lance sticks the landing, and then, you know, Kiami comes in and puts up the extra point. The Ravens get a chance at the kickoff return. They make a valiant effort. It's like they return it to the 40 because we force them to return it, and then game over. So I was like, how do I make this a wild storybook ending when I've said that it's a 3-point game? And that is the way that I did it. Thoughts?
You know, I've always said that you know, you should write for movies or something like that. I can't say that right now because the storybook ending you just put up is the first one all season long that I think both fan bases would be so angry with the way this game turned out for all the reasons. And it was like, they tried to give it away. No, they tried to give it away. Nope, they gave it away. And it's just like, that would be the storyline. That's what we would be talking about in the podcast. That's what the Baltimore guys would be talking about in the podcast. Just the worst 5 minutes of football in the history of ever. D'Amico Ryans is incompetent. What is he doing? Get him out of there. Why is Baltimore throwing the football right up against the 2-minute warning when you got Derrick Henry back there and you have the lead? It's just like all the things you just said are just like, there's no way. And if it went that way, fire both coaches.
Oh man. I knew that one would frustrate you. That was about the response I expected. So I guess it did its job. It was
mission exactly accomplished.
It was meant to be, mission accomplished. And that's what I'm hoping to see this Christmas is a gift from the Texans of mission accomplished against the Ravens. So yeah, thanks for listening to us talk about the Texans Chiefs game, recapping that, and then listening to our preview of the Ravens game. As always, this has been The Bullpen. I've been James Roy, and you can find me at James Roy NFL on Instagram and Twitter. You can find Tom at Third Coast Tom on Twitter and at TCTom1 on Instagram. And we, as a collective, make up The Bullpen. Thanks for tuning in. Stay classy, Houston. And as always, vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly.